Hey, this goes out to our Servers Journey community. As always, you can click the links in the descriptions to find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and a new thing, or you can become a supporter of the show on Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you can gain access to exclusive content, behind-the-scenes material, receive a Servers Journey community sticker, and a shout-out on the show. So, as always, help us to create leaders worth following.
Welcome to this edition of A Server's Journey with Rocky DeStefano. Rocky has been a server since his early days at working behind the counter at a Chick-fil-A to having a successful restaurant of his own. Being a server himself, he loves to talk about leading yourself, a few, many, and leading an organization. Today we welcome Deanne Turner to A Server's Journey. Deanne has worked for Chick-fil-A for more than 30 years and currently serves as the Vice President of Sustainability. Over the years, she has played an intricate part in growing Chick-fil-A's unique and highly regarded culture. Rocky was able to catch up with Deanne at SeaWorld in Orlando, Florida. Let's join that interview in progress.
But I first wanted to ask, just if you could tell us what you were doing prior to Chick-fil-A and maybe how you got associated with Chick-fil-A.
I was in middle school before I got associated with Chick-fil-A, just about, actually. Rocky, I came out of college and went straight to Chick-fil-A at 21. And so I really, my background, interestingly, was I worked for my college in the recruiting area, so that was my first
start. And you were college in Cincinnati?
I was in Cincinnati, Ohio, at Cincinnati Christian University at
the time.
Great
state of Ohio.
Yes.
I'm from Ohio, so I like to plug that a little bit. Not many people plug Ohio as being great.
Yes.
But it is great, so.
Well, I enjoyed my time there. So I came right out of school, and I went to, the funny thing about it was I was a journalism major. And I did work for a brief time for an advertising firm when I first got out of school. And so being a journalism major, I learned really quickly that probably the place to make a living would be on the advertising side
yes.
of it. And I went to Chick-fil-A applying for a position in advertising. And I was turned down twice. And then finally, the most amazing thing happened. My husband was a pastor near the what was then the home
yes,
office.
Yes, yes. And the first yes. home office, yeah.
And a lady came in, and she had a flat tire, and she asked if she could use the phone, because, you know, Rocky, back then there were no cell phones. So.
Yes, I do remember that.
She asked to use the phone, and he said, oh, you don't need to do that. I'll change the tire for you. So he went out and changed the tire, and when he was finished, she gave him one of those cards, you know, a Be Our Guest card
yes,
for a
I
free
remember,
Chick-fil-A
yeah.
sandwich. And he said, oh, do you work at Chick-fil-A? And she said, I do, but my husband's being transferred, and so I'm leaving my job. And he said, oh, really? What department do you work in?
Jeez, this is She's, Providence here, right?
Yes, yeah. And she says, advertising.
Yeah.
And so he quickly ushered her out of the church. He picked up the phone and called me and said, they have a job in advertising. I picked up the phone and called them right away, and I think they were just tired of me constantly pestering them for an interview.
Right, yeah.
So they invited me in. I went through the whole interviewing process, and I got to the very last interview, and the vice president of human resources said to me, he said, well, you know, we have this job in human resources if you're interested in that. And my whole plan was, oh, I'll spend a couple years in HR
right.
and because that'll be interesting and the people are nice there, and then I'll move to marketing.
Right, right.
And 32 years later, I never went to marketing.
Wow. That's an awesome story. I love that, too. My first time interviewing with Chick-fil-A, I was turned down, too. And it actually, you speak about it in some of your books, so I'll kind of save it for later, but Chick-fil-A did me the greatest service the first time by actually turning me down. Mm-hmm. Because when I came back to them, I was ready for the job,
yeah.
you know.
That's
hey,
great.
Talk about a little bit about your family and maybe your passions in life. What makes you tick?
Sure. Well, definitely my family makes me tick. And I've been married to my husband, Ashley, for almost 35 years.
Awesome.
And we have three sons, Trenton, who is 28, and married to Katie, my daughter-in-law. And Trevor, who's 24, and Trey, who's 18. So we're about to be
wow.
empty nesters. He's headed off to college.
Wow. Now, which college did he choose?
He's going to Wake Forest.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. He's going to play football there. So we're.
And so I knew that because yeah. I think one of your passions is football, right?
Well, I didn't have much choice. two of them, college football players, and out of the three. And so we've spent a lot of time at all kinds of sports fields
sure.
over the time. But I really have a passion. Our local church, we're really involved. involved in. My husband's chairman of the elders there. And then missions has been a big drive in my life, really in the last 15 years since my kids were big enough for me to pursue that.
Bit, right? So, and you do a lot of work in Africa, is that correct?
I have in the past. That's been a big passion. My husband and I got involved in a project in Kenya, and we built four children's homes there. Wow. There are 80 kids now in those homes. Most recently, I've been doing some work in Guatemala.
Okay.
And particularly around women's ministry and also leadership training. So those are two things that have been very interesting to me lately.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. So I'm a little bit curious. You've worked with Chick-fil-A now for 32 years, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden you write this book.
Yeah.
And I love the title. It's called It's My Pleasure. Talk to me about why you felt compelled to write the book at this stage.
Sure. Well, it's my pleasure. I started writing that book in 2014, and what had happened is my father had passed away. He was a big business mentor of mine. And Truett Cathy, the founder of Chick-fil-A, was also a mentor of mine, and I'm sure we'll talk more about mm-hmm. what he taught me. But he was a big mentor of mine. And losing both of them around the same time in my life, because I had been a writer since I was a young girl,
right.
the way I dealt with grief was just to start writing.
Right.
And so I started writing just what was in my heart. And some people have called this my love letter to Chick-fil-A.
Right.
And
yeah.
it really was. And so I started writing about all these experiences that I had. And I wasn't writing a book. I was just writing. And
yeah, writing
a few of them
grief
turned
a little bit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Some of them turned into blog posts. Well, the next thing I knew, I'd written on Christmas vacation 16,000 words. And so somebody
got a book there.
Yeah, and somebody came along and said, "Would you like to publish that?" And my intent at the time was very internal to Chick-fil-A focused. Mm-hmm. The idea was, I said, "Well, you know, I don't want the people like you and I, Rocky, who knew Truett, to forget what he taught us, that people decisions are the most important decisions that we make."
Yeah.
And that our business is founded on the foundation of our business is great people decisions.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I didn't want our Chick-fil-A franchisees, and I didn't want our staff members to ever forget that. And then I realized, because it was happening very quickly, all these people who were coming along as franchisees, as staff members at Chick-fil-A who'd never met Truett, and I wanted them to know.
Right.
So it was for us not to forget and for them to know,
right.
and that's why I decided to publish it.
And that's a great reason. We were, you know, talking a little bit before about we've become this big company, and many of the people that are associated with it didn't ever really get to shake Truett's hand,
right.
and that's a big difference because he had such a meaningful impact on so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about a little bit, because you mentioned a lot about creating that compelling culture. What are some ways that you feel like you've helped do that at Chick-fil-A, and some ways that that is important with Chick-fil-A?
Well, you know, I think about, again, we have to go back to Truett because he created the foundation of our culture from the very beginning. And you think about the way he was, even when there were just a few people in the organization, or even go back to his original restaurant, 1946 in Hateville, Georgia.
A little bit different time, right?
Yes. And, you know, Truett, while he believed he served good food, in fact, he had a quote, "Food is essential to life, therefore make it good."
Right.
But at the same time, what he really felt like was important and why his guests kept coming, you know, some of those guests, they were open 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And some of those that worked at the local auto factory and in the airlines, they would eat with them three times a day. And I'm not sure if they came back for the food. I think it's more likely that they came back because Truett and his employees knew their name, they
right.
knew their regular orders, and they knew their stories too.
Yeah.
And so it was like the Cheers of its time, where
that's
everybody
right.
knows
yeah.
your name,
yeah.
you know? And so I think that's, I think he set that foundation of being a place that's welcoming, that's inclusive, that's friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And then we built upon that. And so what we did, from building the culture standpoint, we started with the corporate purpose.
Right.
And while Truett didn't really put that literally into stone, which, you know, we have it stone at the support center now, he didn't put it into stone until 1983. The truth is, I think that the principles of what's in that corporate
mm-hmm.
purpose started from the very beginning. Of course, we know the corporate purpose is to glorify God by being a faithful steward of all that's entrusted to us. and a positive influence on all who come in contact with Chick-fil-A.
Yep.
And so when that came about, then so many people at Chick-fil-A, I was just part of a lot of people at Chick-fil-A that began to articulate exactly what that means, whether it played out in a mission statement or in our core values or some of the guiding principles of the business.
Yeah.
That is the foundation on which everything started, and we built from there.
And you feel like that was important. Like, to me, without that clear focus, it's easy to forget why we're doing what we're doing.
Right.
And the why is so important, you know.
Yeah.
I remember being a 16-year-old team member and meeting Truett, and I didn't realize then who I was speaking with.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize. And yet he said that statement to me, and it spoke to a 16-year-old, because it didn't really talk about selling chicken or making profit. It mm-hmm. talked about being a good steward and having this impact on people. And that really, it spoke loudly to me, and it sounds like it did to you also.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when I started with Chick-fil-A, and this is where I'm going back 30 years too,
mm-hmm.
It was this small company. I think my first get-together with Chick-fil-A, we were around 300 stores.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody up north, all my relatives, they had never heard of Chick-fil-A, and they didn't know what I was getting involved with.
They were still calling it Chick-fil-A or Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. If we were lucky, they were calling it at all, you know.
Yeah.
And now we're this company of, you know, several thousand stores.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting ready to take over the position, I think it's the number three restaurant in America behind
yes.
Starbucks and McDonald's. How did that happen? Because I know you had a role in that for sure by selecting proper talent.
Mm-hmm.
How did we get so big so quick?
You might have to edit this part, Larry. He's like, whoa, how did we do that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think back to when Chick-fil-A really began to explode. You know, we started out in regional malls, but mainly in the Southeast. You alluded to the fact that you were from Ohio, and that was a new area for us. But there we were in the early 1980s, regional restaurant for the most part, in malls. One of the most important decisions Chick-fil-A made for its growth was recognizing what was going to happen to the shopping mall.
Right.
And in 1985, they took a big risk. And I remember this so well. That the executives at Chick-fil-A, because in 1985, I was an administrator.
Right.
And I remember the executives walking around wringing their hands because this was a very expensive venture to open this first restaurant on the street.
Yep.
And it was, of course, at North Druid Hills there in the Atlanta area. And they, you know, is this the right thing? Are we making the right decision? This is going to cost so much money. And what if they had not made that decision?
Yeah.
You know, Chick-fil-A would exist no more. We would have become obsolete if they had not taken that risk. So when you think about, you know, the business school model of S-curves, that was one of those inflection points that was so important to the growth of Chick-fil-A. But it wasn't much later than that, as we began to expand and plan, that Truett was meeting with a group of leaders, and he said something very important. People had vision for this big growth, and of course he was always, his statement was, we climb with care and confidence.
That's right. Yeah.
And he was very careful about growth. He didn't like to add a lot of staff members because he never wanted to be in a position to have to lay people off. And he knew the volatility of business, so he was very careful about those things. But he made a statement somewhere in the middle of all that growth, and he said, we're not going to get bigger till we get better.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he stopped and said, we're going to focus on operational excellence.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how big we get, we're going to do things right. We're going to make sure we have consistency. And we're going to focus on our service model. And, of course, that turned into, you know, make second mile second nature as our second mile service model. And then the third part of that came later was creating remarkable experiences for guests. So all of those things were about, we're going to get better before we get bigger.
Yeah, and that spoke a lot to a lot of us because we were afraid we'd get bigger but not better.
Exactly.
And it was a big fear.
Yeah.
For sure.
And Truett was so smart, and he was exactly right, because we focused on those things that actually helped us get bigger.
Yeah.
And the demand for Chick-fil-A in more locations and so forth became evident, and it provided that opportunity. But I think that was a very important turning point for Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, I agree. And it's so funny to think back now, where we have, you know, so many more freestanding stores than malls, and really the malls are a very small part of our business, still important, but very small. It's so weird to think that that was such a tough decision. With hindsight, it looks like the only option, but I could see how that would be a really scary
process to decide where to go. And I don't want to tiptoe around this next question. You've had a huge role in bringing in the top talent to this chain, which I really feel like is one of our differences compared to a lot of chains. And I'm not just saying that because you've had a hand in my career, although I appreciate that. Tell us what, in your opinion, is the most important thing that you look for when you're hiring a staff member or bringing an operator onto the chain or into the chain.
Well, I have to say, I think the most important thing when we're making those decisions, and you know, I said earlier, people decisions are the most important decisions we make, and there's no more important decision we make at Chick-fil-A than who we give the keys to the restaurant to.
Yes,
the entire operation depends on the quality of that individual.
Right.
And when we're selecting, I believe selecting for character first.
Yeah.
You can teach just about anybody, I think, Rocky, and you've taught a lot of people to make a chicken sandwich.
Right.
I've learned to make one. I've never taught anybody to make a chicken sandwich, just to clarify.
I'm sure you do really well. I'm sure you can do that.
But the character piece, that's really hard to teach somebody.
Yeah.
Now, I think character is taught, and I think that's one of the fantastic things about, you know, entrusting a young person to work for a Chick-fil-A operators. I think that's one of the things they learn in their time at Chick-fil-A is character attributes. But selecting for character first, somebody who's going to represent the brand, the good name of Chick-fil-A in a community is very, very important. So that's, to me, the most important thing.
And I would agree with you on, I feel like when I came to Chick-fil-A, I had the character piece, but I was still trying to figure it out. And the role of my operator was huge in kind of, you know, standing off the rough edges and really showing me and living it out daily. This is what character looks like, making the decisions that are not going to make you more money, but are the right decisions.
Right. So.
When you talk about recruiting for culture, and I think that feeds into some of what you were saying, talk about that. How do you recruit for culture?
Well, I always think when the culture piece, a lot of that is give people an opportunity to screen themselves out.
Right.
So one of the things we do, as you well know, we take a lot of time to make a selection.
Yeah.
It's not because we can't make up our mind. It's to expose people to what we're all about and let them decide, does this fit me? Is this a place for me to be? And I'm not, you know, at the top would be, do I align with the purpose of the organization to be a faithful steward and to impact lives?
Right.
That would be one of the obvious ones. But it, you've had people that we've sent into your restaurant and said, hey, go talk to Rocky. Mm-hmm. Go find out if this is a lifestyle that you want to live.
Right.
And in terms of both what the work actually is, and then secondly, that responsibility of we have a brand that has a good name. And are you willing to live your life and run your business in such a way that it's reflective of that good name?
Yeah.
And so that's what I mean by selecting for culture. And I actually believe for the most part, people select themselves for that part of it. Because
yeah, I agree.
What we want to do is give them all the exposure and then let them decide if this is a place where they think they would fit in well.
That's an excellent point. There's one question that you mentioned in the book that you ask before you make a decision on staff or operators, and I love it, and it's something that I've stolen for sure. I use this when I look to hire, too. Share with me that question that you ask yourself.
Yes, absolutely. Well, primarily this is around the selection of operators. And, you know, I've used the term franchisee because we use that interchangeably now at Chick-fil-A. But the most important question is at the end of the interview, for me to think about that person and ask them, you know, why would I want my children to work for you?
Yeah.
Because I am obviously in a restaurant chain, we hire a lot of, I shouldn't say we, you all hire a lot of teens. And if I wouldn't want my children to work for this person, why would I expect anybody else would want their children to work for them?
That's a great question. And I can tell you it flavors every decision every day for me because if I'm asking that, you know, what I want somebody to, like, and for me it's more of what I want my daughters to work alongside this person. That's the kind of the question that I ask when they are interview or when I'm interviewing them. But it does impact me because if I'm saying, do I want my daughters to work alongside them, then I also have to ask myself, would I want my daughters to work for me? I mean, am I going to impact and influence, you know, lives?
And I hope that that's something that people, as they get into their role as a operator and they have tough days, and you know, I mean, again, not something I've done, but I know that those are really, really tough days, and talk to plenty of operators to understand that, that they remember that, is yeah. that somebody chose them to be a leader over somebody else's child, and so that every employee that works for them is somebody's son and daughter, somebody's mom or dad,
right.
somebody's wife or husband,
right.
and that they're treated in the same way that they'd want those people in their life to be treated,
yeah.
even when it's hard.
I think when you think about that, when you ask yourself those questions, it inherently makes you a better leader, and it also, there's a certain amount of pressure
mm-hmm.
because you want to be that person.
Right.
It takes it a lot farther away from just a chicken sandwich
yeah.
when you think about things like that. In your book, you mention a lot about impacting lives, and I love that because you wouldn't necessarily think that a restaurant would be concerned about impacting lives.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you've mentioned some of your work in Kenya and in
mm-hmm.
Guatemala. Talk to me what you feel or why is that important that we impact?
No. I go back to the history of Chick-fil-A, and I think about Truett Cathy, and you might remember the story, and it's not in It's My Pleasure, but I'll tell you really quickly. He had an employee that worked for him named Henry White,
mm-hmm.
and Henry worked there at the Dwarf House in the 1950s. He's an African-American young man, and Truett took a real interest in him, which was unusual for the times. But Henry was a good student. He was smart, but Henry was he was the oldest of a family of seven. And he had earned a scholarship to college, and he wanted to be a doctor. But
right.
With his needs for his family, he felt like he had to keep working at the restaurant. And he didn't respond to that scholarship. So he graduated from high school, and he didn't go on to college. Well, Truett really wanted to see that happen. So he put a jar in his restaurant, said, Eddie's college fund. And the guests by that time really loved Eddie, too. He was one
right.
of the favorite cooks. So, you know, they dropped their spare change in there over the summer after that first year. And at the end of the summer, Truett went to Eddie. He said, so how much money do you have? And he said, well, I have about half of the tuition I need. Well, the next morning, there was a check for the rest of it in there from
wow.
Truett Cathy.
Yeah.
Now, Truett was not a wealthy man at this mm-hmm. point. He was running just one small, tiny restaurant. He had no idea the impact that would have for generations to come. But, you know, the rest of the story was Eddie did go on to college and got his degree. He didn't get to go to medical school, but he did get his master's degree, and he became a high-ranking official in the school system in
yes.
which he taught.
Yep.
And so Eddie went on to impact thousands of lives because of Truett's investment in him.
Absolutely.
And that's really been, that was what, when we talk about impacting lives, I really believe it started, I said Henry, but it was actually Eddie White.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Henry was his dad. That's
yeah.
why I was confused.
Yeah.
But it was Eddie White. And so I believe it really started with there. Now, how did that grow? Well, now we have, Chick-fil-A has 2,300 restaurants and about 2,000 franchisees and 1,600 staff members. And then, you know, Chick-fil-A franchisees have nearly 200,000 team members.
Well, I actually did not. That's an amazing number. Wow.
Yeah, the multiplication of all that influence that started with one man. So one time in our annual conference that we have together at Chick-fil-A, I was sitting around a table of 10, and it was all predominantly Chick-fil-A operators and their spouses and a few Chick-fil-A staff members. And I just stopped and listened to what was being talked about. And what was being talked about at each of these places was all the missions around the world they were involved in, teaching leadership skills in countries where people wouldn't have the opportunity, drilling wells for clean drinking water, building orphanages or children's homes, building churches, building schools, feeding the hungry, serving in all these ways all over the country, places that'll never hear it. Chick-fil-A. They
yeah.
don't know what a Chick-fil-A sandwich is. Places that Truett probably didn't even know where they were.
Right.
And he had never visited. But that impact.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is why I've been here for 32 years.
Absolutely, yeah.
And, you know, chicken is just a means to do all of those things. And Truett was a great steward of that. And he's passed that legacy on to all of us to continue.
Yeah, and there's a certain amount of, you know, we love hearing those stories. I'm excited about good sales days or you know, a good profit check at the end of the month. But the thing that sustains me are those stories, the times I know that I've been able to impact people. But I impact people because I was impacted by Truett and my operator. And, you know, and in fact, we're in October going to bring, I think, the first team and operator missions trip to build a water well in Nicaragua.
Oh, wonderful.
And so I actually have a director now mm-hmm. that we're trying to grow it to where 2 times a year mm-hmm. our store can build a well somewhere. Mm-hmm. And we're as excited about that as doing a $20,000 day for yeah. sure. So.
Well, those $20,000 days help for that opportunity to do that.
Absolutely,
and I
yes.
know you're thankful for those guests who yes. invest in that way.
Well, yeah, it is. And you mentioned when Truett started, he wasn't what he is now or what he was now mm-hmm. or this huge chain. He was mm-hmm. it was a nickel and dime business mm-hmm. for him. And so the impacts of a few pennies mm-hmm. for Eddie, it does all mm-hmm. this. So without a doubt, if my customers didn't come in and you know, eat with us often, we wouldn't have the ability to do these things. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's they understand it's more than just a chicken sandwich.
That's right. So,
one of my favorite quotes in chapter 4, you really talk about stewarding talent. And the quote was, "The kindest thing that you can do for someone is tell them the truth." I love that statement. And it's one that has taken me years to learn, mm-hmm. the truth aspect. Talk to me about what you mean with that statement.
Well, I think we have a choice to be nice or kind. And nice sometimes is just telling things to people because that's what they want to hear.
Right.
And kindness is when we tell them the truth. And so a lot of other lessons around that statement is things like, it's kindness to refuse immediately what you eventually intend to deny.
Another great quote.
Yeah, I learned that from our former Chick-fil-A president, Jimmy Collins. In fact, he instilled that so much in me, especially in making hiring decisions, because wasn't it disappointing to someone if you dragged them along through an entire interviewing process? And this used to happen at times that
sure.
people would, it would stretch out for 5 or 6 months and then to be told no. And that wasn't a very kind thing at all. Mm-hmm. And so what he really pushed me was, when you know, make that decision and let them know. Telling people the truth. The other reason I think it's important to tell people the truth, people who work for you and about their performance and about do I have an opportunity for growth or not? To not tell them that is to steal their life.
Yeah.
And now that's a strong statement, or at least steal their career.
Right.
But not to be, you know, if somebody's working for you, Rocky, and they have aspirations of being a Chick-fil-A operator, but you know that's not the right career path, and we don't tell them the truth about that, then, you know, how do they feel about the time that they've invested? And they can make a choice. They may say, hey, I might not be an operator, but I would love to continue working for you
sure.
in a leadership role. That would be fantastic. But allowing people to make those choices is so much kinder and
yeah.
so much a better steward of talent, because we're called not to be just a faithful steward of, obviously, our treasure, but of time and talent as well. And so to tell people the truth about what they need to know is a better stewardship of that talent.
Yeah, real quick, seeing that in reality and practice, when I was first applying with Chick-fil-A, I had also received a scholarship offer to law school. And something in the interview process, I must have tipped my hat that maybe I was a little mm-hmm. bit 50-50. Mm-hmm. And so they had to tell me over a phone conversation that we think you're a fit, but we're afraid that you would be cheating yourself if you didn't mm-hmm. pursue law school mm-hmm. first. And so at first I was devastated, of course, because yeah. I really wanted Chick-fil-A. But that allowed me to go to law school and see, even though I like law, I don't want to be an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So that when I came back to Chick-fil-A, and thankfully they accepted me the mm-hmm. second time, I never, when I have a bad day, think I should have been an attorney. I know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think often about it was a lesson, and it was an expensive lesson, mm-hmm. but it was the right one
mm-hmm.
because I think I would have wondered, did I make the wrong choice?
Yeah.
And I never. And so that was a kindness that they did for me.
Mm-hmm.
Even on the roughest day, I never wonder what I know I made the right choice.
Right.
So,
and that's what we eventually want. We're not mm-hmm. trying to talk anybody
that's
into
right.
doing this.
Yeah.
We want it to be the right thing for them, the right thing for us. And when that happens, I mean, that's just contributed to the overall success, when
that's
you're
right.
able to find people who want to stay for a long, long time.
Yeah. So another quote that I loved was, "Integrity suffers and relationships are diminished when we don't do what we say we will do." Flesh out that statement a little bit, because I agree with it, but how do you think that impacts people when you don't do the things you say you're going to do?
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite Bible verses was one that I heard Truett Cathy say over and over again, Proverbs 22:1, a good name is rather to be had than great riches. And I think that that is the verse of integrity.
I agree.
And so in our organization, one of the ways we've defined integrity is doing the right thing even when it's hard. And, you know, I think about the example that Truett set with that, and that was being closed on Sunday. And while it would have been, you know, as he expanded the business, people don't know this about him, but here he is. He's invested everything. He's leveraged himself. He's trying to expand this business. Gets this great idea. I'm going to go in shopping malls. He gets in the first one, but he starts expanding in the 1970s. Well, we know what was going on in the 1970s. Shopping malls were all the rage, and Sunday was the biggest day. And so he'd go to the landlords, and they'd say, hey, we'd love to have you here, but you need to open on Sunday.
Right.
And Truett said, well, I won't be able to do business with you then. And he walked away. And, you know, to this day, that has continued to be, of course, Chick-fil-A's policy to be closed on Sunday. Near the end of Truett's life, a lot of people would ask him, Truett, did you ever think about how much money you lost because you were closed on Sunday? And he would respond, no, but I've thought about how much money I would have lost had I chosen to open on Sunday.
That's a great statement. Yeah.
So that was a model of doing what's right, even when it's hard. And what I think about Chick-fil-A's leadership, especially in the days that we're in now. Now, no organization is perfect. No person is perfect. And everybody makes mistakes. But one of the things that I think Chick-fil-A really has going for is I look at the leaders in our organization is that they're people of integrity.
Yes.
And they select people of integrity, people who do what they say they're going to do. Whether it's the simple thing and the important thing of serving Chick-fil-A operators, a staff member serving you all, because that's what we're in business to do. You're the ones who, you know, as Jimmy used to say, nothing happens till someone sells something and you're the one selling it.
Yes.
So whether it's that part of doing what you say you do to support those that we're in business with, or being sure that food is safe for a customer to eat.
Right.
You know, and that you're committed to that idea that that's my integrity.
Right.
In that case, that's just a principle that I've seen lived out again and again and again.
I agree. Yeah. So, you know, our podcast is called A Server's Journey.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that it permeates Chick-fil-A is this idea of servant leadership. And you write a good deal about that in the book. Who are some of the people that you look up to as a great example of servant leadership?
Within the Chick-fil-A family, there's a couple of real strong examples that come to mind with me. One of them is Chick-fil-A's president, Tim Tosopoulos.
Yeah.
In watching Tim demonstrate these principles over and over again. Now, he taught them. I had the privilege of reporting to Tim for about 15 years during my career at Chick-fil-A, and that's probably the thing he taught me the most about without using words.
Yeah, sure.
And watching his behavior. You know, he would be the first to arrive and the last to leave. And, Rocky, if he walked into your restaurant today, we both know exactly the very first thing he would do. Go meet all your team members,
right? Yeah, he kind of forgets you. He goes to the team members, which I've always appreciated.
Yeah, and then he'll remember their names.
Right.
And the next time he comes in your restaurant and he sees them, he calls them by name, which absolutely amazes me that he has that ability to do that. And it's all genuine and authentic.
Right.
But I've watched him do a lot of things, but there's one day that just stands out in my mind that I've not forgotten. And there's a day every couple of years that the entire staff gets together for a summit to learn about the business and talk about plans and really to focus on how can we serve Chick-fil-A operators better. That's one of the main purposes of it. And we were at this event a couple of years ago, and it was one in which we had to take buses to the venue. And people arrived on those buses all at different times, but we all left at the same time. And there were, you know, a limited number of buses to bus everybody. And it was 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. You know, and everybody's kind of excited to get where they need to get at 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. And some of them had to get back to the office to pick up children in the child care center or whatever. And I was in charge of the event, so I was, you know, hanging back myself, getting people on buses. And then I realized the other person that was hanging back with me was Tim Tisopoulos, the president of the company.
Yep.
And he wasn't, and you know what? He wasn't just standing around waiting, or he wasn't over on his phone in a corner doing his email. He was standing out there with all those other people who were waiting. He was asking about their families. He was talking to them. He was using that time to relate to people that he works with. And then we put the last person on the bus, and he looked around, and he said, "Is there anyone else?" And there wasn't. And he said, "Okay." And he hopped on the bus. Yeah.
And that's exact. I mean, that goes back to what True had said about becoming better instead of bigger. And he's growing that culture of we get better by interacting with people, by serving people. And that's always spoke volumes to me, for sure.
Yeah. So that's one little example, Rocky. But there are just, as you know, I mean, we both had a long career at Chick-fil-A and just watched this example after example after example of people who live out that servant leader model. One of the things that I was really glad, we recently had a change in our core values. Now, your purpose in an organization doesn't change.
Right.
Your mission will change when you've accomplished it.
Right.
And core values can change. And they didn't change that much because they're really based on the original core values. But I like the ones we came up with because they're a little bit more descriptive.
Yep.
And our number one core value is we're here to serve.
Yeah.
Obviously, team members are part of Chick-fil-A to serve guests. Operators serve both the guests and their team members. And our job at the support center is to serve operators so that they can better do what they're doing. And I love that description of that's what we're here as an organization to do.
Well, and as we grow bigger, you know, we're no longer a chain of 300. Now we're a chain of 2,300 with 200,000 team members and a corporate staff of thousands. You have to be more intentional about reminding people, hey, this is what we do.
Right.
More than anything else. And I find that even in our store, we've got very intentional about, hey, our job is, our mission or our vision at our store is to make their story better. Mm-hmm. And we mean, I've got to make my team's story better, and they have to make my story better, and we all have to make the customer's story. But, you know, when it works, it's a beautiful thing.
Right.
But you know when you miss it, and it's great to hear about Tim and his dedication to it.
Yeah, and, you know, again, I said this earlier, we're not perfect at all of this.
Absolutely,
but
sure.
There's one thing that we try to, that I think is different about Chick-fil-A's culture in this area is we call it the inverted pyramid.
Yeah.
At Chick-fil-A, the people who work at the support center are not at the top of the organization. And those and leaders at the support center would be the very first people to tell you that. The people at the top of our organization are operators because they are what makes that happen. And really valued are the team members that work for them because they're the interface of our brand to Chick-fil-A customers every day.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and at my location, it's me at the bottom serving my team so that they can serve the ultimate customer, which is the actual customer with the dollar in their hand, you know. Well, here at A Server's Journey, we have a fun segment, and we call it This One or That One.
Okay.
And I won't put you on the spot, but in this segment, I'm going to basically throw two names out, two different people.
Okay.
And I just want you to say your favorite, which one's your favorite, and maybe a why.
Okay.
Okay? So, and it's okay if you don't know or if you don't have favorite, but...
Larry can edit it.
Yeah, that's right. So the first one is Elon Musk or Richard Branson from Virgin Atlantic Airlines.
Richard Branson, and primarily just because I'm so I travel so much, and I'm intrigued by some of the things he does in an airplane.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, now Steve Jobs or Bill Gates?
Bill Gates, his benevolence,
unreal, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And just his parenting and all of those things, I have a lot of respect for him.
I'm right there with
you. I'm an Apple person, but I have a lot of respect for Bill Gates.
Yeah, isn't it? Because, you know, I'm an Apple person too, but it's easier to respect Bill Gates. And I still, even though I have a Mac, I still use the Windows bundle. You know. Steven Spielberg or Walt Disney?
That's a hard one.
Right.
I might say Walt Disney.
Okay. Are we allowed to say that at SeaWorld?
Well, when I think about Walt Disney and just the staying power, you know, and again, it reminds me a lot of Truett Cathy. Things at Disney have changed, obviously, since Walt's time, but he made such an impression, and his lessons were so well taught that even through continued innovation and improvement on the original idea, his legacy is carried on in that way.
And the culture is still active that he helped create.
Exactly.
Okay, Star Wars or Harry Potter? This may be the biggest question out there for people, but Star Wars or Harry Potter?
Harry Potter. I'm not much of a science fiction person. I don't even think I've seen all the Star Wars movies.
We'll edit that out.
Which is tough to have three boys.
I know. I was going to say, how did you make it?
I just somehow avoided that, but I saw all the Harry Potter movies with them.
Okay, now I have three daughters. Uh-huh. So in my house, this is the most important question.
Oh, okay.
Broadway or rock and roll? It's just a tough one.
Well, in my house, it would be rock and roll, but I like Broadway.
Okay. Now, do you have a favorite show?
Mamma Mia.
Okay, yeah. My wife is a huge, she loves Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
If I did not like Broadway, I could not live in my house. I'm sure they would throw me out.
Bless your heart.
Okay, our next segment, our last one, is a simple one. But since we believe that each of us is on this journey, this leadership journey, we like to ask this question. Will you tell us about a favorite leader or maybe a life quote or something that you kind of try to live by?
You know, I have a brand new one, Rocky.
Okay, great.
That I have given so much thought to just in the last few days. But I was actually watching the funeral of Barbara Bush, a former first lady who passed away last week. And I know that's dating this podcast.
No, we're
but,
good, yeah.
But that was... in watching that funeral, you know, you learn so much by funerals. I think that's something we learn as we get older, that attending funerals, it's not just a respect thing, but you learn so much.
That's right.
And this one, Barbara Bush is somebody I've always thought a lot of.
Yeah, me too.
But it was watching that funeral, and her biographer said something, and it was almost in passing. He said she lived a consequential life. And that just really stuck me in the soul. She lived a consequential life. This was a woman, by the way, who would tell you if she were here, she never earned a paycheck, but lived a consequential life.
Right.
And it made me stop and go, Deanne, what are you doing in this season of life to live a consequential life?
One of my mentors, who I would consider to be kind of the guy that's been there through my entire life, he counts his Saturdays. And so he knows, he goes, if I live to be an average length, I have this many Saturdays left. Mm-hmm. He's in his mid-60s. And so his question is this purpose, is this thing I'm going to do, is it worth this Saturday? Because I'm never, and to me that's always struck, but it's kind of along the same line. Well, Deanne, I want to thank you so much for being on A Server's Journey. This show is all about stories of great leadership and how people get there. And I really want to be clear with you. You've been very important on my journey and on the journey of Chick-fil-A. I think we, as a chain, and I know you're a humble person, but as a chain, we have a lot to really be grateful to you for. You've done a tremendous job of picking great talent, people with a heart to serve, and it has definitely helped us become what we are today. At this point, I normally tell people to run out and buy your book. It's My Pleasure. By Deanne Turner, but it's done well enough to where I had to kind of outbid somebody to get the book. So can you tell us a little bit about maybe a reprint or where we're going with that?
Well, it did sell out three times. It was reprinted three times. And I am changing publishers, and so we're in that process right now. So look for it in 2019, hopefully the first part. I can't make a commitment yet, but look for it. And hopefully we'll have that out there, and people will be able to easily access it. Now, if I happen to come for a speaking event, I actually have some paperback copies that are part of my speaking event. So if you want me to come for a speaking event, I'll bring books with me.
And is there somebody they need to contact or any way to get a hold of you to speak?
Sure. DeanneTurner.com is where you can reach out to me directly, or on Twitter at Deanne Turner, that's D-E-E-A-N-N Turner, on Instagram at Deanne Turner, or Facebook author page Deanne Turner.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And I can tell you, even if you do have to outbid somebody, it's worthwhile. You know, you can wait till 2019, but I know in today's society we don't like to wait. So if you have to outbid, that's okay too. But again, I just want to thank you so much for your time, Deanne.
Thank you, Rocky, and thanks for all you do to serve Chick-fil-A. You've been a great example of the things that I write about, and it's my pleasure, and it has been my pleasure to be with you today.
And it's my pleasure to have you. Thank you.
Well, I want you to check out our website. The website is called A Server's Journey. And, of course, we want you to tell your friends to subscribe to the podcast.
Yes, please.
And, you know, so you could be here each week and not miss a single episode of what Rocky's got here on the journey, the yes. server's journey.
Yes, I agree with that 100%. Jay, thank you.
Okay. Until next time.
Until next time, I'm Rocky DeStefano, and together we are going to make some stories better. Really want to thank you for listening today and coming along on this journey.